Y'all ready? Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Let's go. Come on.
Tiger Rag Radio is on the air.
Let's crank this thing up.
We're statewide, breaking down the latest happenings with LSU athletics.
This is us.
Hear from the coaches.
Here in Tiger Stadium on Saturday night, there is nothing like it.
The players.
Just having fun and we working, baby. That's it, baby.
The recruits.
Show some passion and some heart.
And those who cover the Fighting Tigers of LSU and the SEC.
LSU is the best job in football.
It's 2 hours of nonstop LSU talk.
What a privilege. I mean, you get to represent LSU.
Tiger Rag Radio is brought to you by Cummins. Cummins creates power solutions that the world depends on. Louisiana Beef Industry Council. Boudreaux's Electrical Services. Sunshine Quality Solutions. Super Chevy Dealers. And Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. Get ready to talk Tigers with producer Andre Champagne and our host, Todd Horn, Jeff Palermo, and Glenn Gilbo.
Players that are better people than they are players.
This is Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Hour number two of the show. This is Jeff Palermo, news and sports director of Louisiana Radio Network, along with the editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, Glenn Gilbo, the executive editor, Todd Horn, and Andre Champagne, our producer tonight. Coming up a little bit later on in hour number two, we'll talk some hoops. LSU men's basketball coach Matt McMahon will join us. We'll also hear from Corey Diaz, who covers the LSU women's team for the USA Today Network. But we talk some more football. We talk some more recruiting. One of the newest LSU Tigers, Imari Peterson, a cornerback from Orlando, who was committed to West Virginia, decommitted to the Mountaineers in late November, right before Lane Kiffin was named. Actually, might have been on the same day as Lane Kiffin was named as the new head coach at LSU. And now Imari Peterson is part of this stellar recruiting class that Lane Kiffin has brought in. He joins us now. Imari, thanks a lot for spending some time with us. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great.
Well, it's great to have you on the airwaves. Tell us what it was like. Man, just so tough on I feel sorry for some of you guys when you get lost up in the wash, I like to say, you know, when there's coaching changes and you're committed to a school for so long and then all of a sudden you got to make a quick decision and figure out when circumstances change, when people change, and you got to make some really difficult decisions. Give us an idea of what was going through your mind in late November and how'd you end up committing and eventually signing with LSU?
So the way it was going, when I decommitted from West Virginia, Coach Raymond, he always kept in touch with me. He always told me that before I go to another school, he told me just wait on him, just wait, and they might have a spot. And that's really just what I did. I just waited on him. I was patient, and I came up, and he got me up here in January.
Hey, Maury, this is Andre. Just talk about that. What were those conversations with Coach Raymond like on the 13th when he called you? And then talk about your relationship with Coach Raymond and what that's looked like over your high school career.
Coach Raymond, so he started recruiting me. He started recruiting me, last year around spring. And really, we always kept in touch. Even when he was recruiting me, he always shot me a text almost every day, shot me a message every week, let me know good luck before the game and everything. And with Raymond, it has always been love. He's a real cool person, real cool person. And even just on a regular, just talking to him, even outside of football, he's a real cool person to talk to about just anything. And yeah, he's always shown me a lot of love, and it's just always been a connection.
Yeah, and so tell us about your visit to Baton Rouge, kind of leading up to signing on that Sunday. After that, you know, that you had committed, and just tell us what you did, maybe, you know, what the trip was like, and who you met. Just talk about that.
So my trip up here, it was real. It was smooth. Will showed me around the school. I talked to Chelsea. I was able to talk to my defensive coordinator. It was all good. I got to try a couple food spots before I really settled in. And yeah, I went to New Orleans and it was all just nice. It was nice.
Yeah. And just as a player, we kind of touched on it a little bit, but can you just talk about what you're going to bring to Blake Baker's defense and why do you feel that you fit in into his kind of 4-2-5 scheme?
I think what I bring to the defense is versatility. I think I'm a DB that can play corner, could play nickel. I could play free, strong. I think I can do it all at a different at a deep position. And I just think that with a guy like me, you don't have to worry about, like, so if I'm in press man all game, you won't have to worry about my man. Just worry about the other DBs. That's the type of person I am.
Hey, Emery, you're in a state there in Orlando that's surrounded by great football programs and history, Florida State, Florida, Miami, Central Florida. What was it about LSU that made you want to leave that hotbed of college football?
Development. You don't get any better development at a position at LSU. And my head coach, he let me know what it was. And I just went with what my head coach said. And even though I know there's a lot of DBs here, but I'm ready to compete for a starter spot and just development.
Yeah, Emar, and just kind of now that you've enrolled and spent a few weeks here in Baton Rouge, I guess what has surprised you most about the program? Maybe just being here for a couple weeks, and maybe even just kind of the culture here.
What surprised me? So I didn't actually know, and you know, when you watch TV, you hear, but their accent is actually real. Like everyone has an accent down here, and I thought that. It was like an accent thing, but everyone has it, and it's like it's crazy. Like everyone has an accent.
Do we have accents? All three of us, Emery?
No,
I'm all right.
I don't hear you about
that. Yeah. And so I guess just touching up on that, like I said, you've been here a few weeks. Just tell me about early workouts. What's that been like? And I guess what are the vibes around the building right now? And just seeing kind of all that talent that you're surrounded by.
Seeing time I'm surrounded by, it really pushed me to go harder every day, honestly, knowing that I can't slack at all. And it just pushed me to go harder every single day. And knowing that I have guys like B.J. Pickett, Jakeem Jackson, just knowing when I feel like I'm tired, I just look over at them, see them still going, and you know, I just know I got to keep just like them.
Talking with Emari Peterson, who is part of this LSU recruiting class. And Emari, one of the big storylines involving this football program right now is, okay, a lot of talent is brought in, but how does Lane Kiffin and this coaching staff in a very short period of time take all this talent and produce a really good team out of it? What are some of the things that the coaches are trying to stress? And I know you're not out on the practice field, and a lot of this is more with the strength and conditioning coach, and not exactly sure how many times Lane has really spoken to you guys as a team, but are there team building activities? How do you try to build the chemistry like this when you're basically putting 60, 65 new guys together along with the 15 to 20 that were here before?
Really, I try to build my connections in the locker room. I've built great connections with Corey Barber, Trent, Trey Brown. I built a couple good connections already, but it's all just in the workouts. We all know what we came to. We all know we came to compete. We all know the workouts are going to be hard. So, you know, we just got to stick together and keep our head down. All just work.
Emari, thanks a lot for your time, man. We appreciate it. How do you like the campus so far?
Campus is really, really, really big, but it's all good.
What do you think of this weather? You don't get this in Orlando, huh?
No,
18 degree mornings.
Yeah, the weather is definitely different from Orlando, but I'm getting used to it.
Yeah, it'll warm up. Don't worry, man.
Yeah, don't worry, Mark. You'll be you'll lose a lot of water weight come summer workouts.
Yeah, we're about March and April, about as good as you can get as far as weather in the world here in Louisiana coming up. So don't worry about it, man. Thanks a lot. We appreciate your time tonight, and look forward to seeing you playing Death Valley.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me up here.
All right. That is Emari Peterson joining us here on Tiger Rag Radio. And again, for those that just might be joining us, you can always catch us on YouTube. The show gets posted up to YouTube about 40 minutes or so after we get off the air at 8 o'clock, or anywhere you get your favorite podcast. So some good stuff there from Emari. I don't know how much of an impact he's going to have next season, but this is kind of one of those things you were talking about, Glenn. with the transfer portal class. Yeah, there's these frontline players that he brought in, but there's also a lot of depth pieces there. So it's just not, okay, let's get the 22 best players and throw them out there and hope we don't get any injuries. There is going to be depth on this team.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think he's going to continue to – he's going to switch more to high school recruiting next year, I think. He's not going to sign 40 guys.
I don't think you can. I don't think that's sustainable.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think he's just off to a great start with building the program long-term, even though everybody's thinking, oh, national championship this season, as Mike Scarborough said, you know.
Right.
He's already making inroads into the class of 27 and doing work for 28 and 29. And, yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys in that portal and in this signing class on Wednesday that might not have a major impact in 2026, but it shouldn't matter. And, you know, and Lane's going to have to re-recruit him. But, you know, and that's going to be key because this is the biggest – this is one of the biggest portal classes ever. There's a couple of classes that have been in the 50s, you know, but that's going to be the secret is how he can retain most of that 40 going into 27 and 28.
Looking forward to 2 o'clock on Wednesday as we hear Lane Kiffin speak his first press conference since his introductory press conference back on December 1st. Let's go ahead, Andre, and take this break early, come back, reset, get into a couple of other things before we bring in Matt McMahon at the bottom of the hour, so stay tuned for that. You're listening to Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
Now, back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
Back here on Tiger Rag Radio, Jeff Palermo, along with the executive editor for Tiger Rag Magazine, that's Todd Horn, and the editor, Glenn Gilbo. There is a new edition of, and by the way, if you need to listen to the show, listen back, want to hear that interview we did with Mike Scarborough, or even better, Richard Anderson, we had him on in hour number one. You can find us anywhere you get your podcasts. We're also up on YouTube about 30 to 40 minutes after showtime. But Tiger Rag, can I say it's the bread and butter is the magazine? The website's the bread and butter, right?
I would say that the website has become very, very...
But your roots. How about that? Your roots.
Well, the roots, here's the thing. Here, and I hear where you're coming from. The roots are the content.
Yeah.
And the content... We are publishing about 8 to 10 articles a day online.
You are. It's crazy how every time I don't mean to interrupt, but you always interrupt me. So I'm going to interrupt.
He does. Yeah. So do I. So just go ahead.
But every time I log on to TigerRag.com, there's like 4 new stories on there, and yeah. I'm logging on all day.
Yeah,
it's crazy, and it's only you three guys, unless there's somebody else that I don't know that works here.
You know, the thing is that the content is fresh all the time, and you know, like Mike Scarborough was talking about, he's like, you know, Lane Kiffin is good for business because there's always something happening. There's always something to report on. And that keeps that traffic flowing into that website. So, but what I would point out is the latest issue of the print magazine, and a lot of people don't know this, although it's getting more and more popular, is that print magazine goes out, but there's a digital version of it on the site. You can flip through the pages just like you can in the magazine, and it's free. So, and there are literally hundreds of thousands of people a month who are reading Tiger Rag magazine on the Tiger Rag website.
And the magazine is also free in grocery stores all around Baton Rouge, and you're going to start seeing them soon. We just got it. You're going to start seeing it around town. And the headline, this is the baseball softball issue. It's All In On Now, as the baseball team tries to repeat as national champions for the first time since Skip in 96-97, and Beth Tarina, who went to the College World Series 4 times in her first 5 years, but hasn't been since 2017. But she's been getting close, and she's got a pretty good team this year. So there's a lot about her too, by Andre, and it's a great issue. So ready for baseball season.
It's everything you need to know about the baseball team and everything you need to know about the softball team, plus it's got football news in it as well. You can pick it up, like Glenn said, anywhere around Baton Rouge. Send locations will start being there later this week. But around the state and around the country, if you're listening to us right now on a podcast or what have you, you can read it on TigerRag.com, the digital issue. I encourage you to do that. It's a great read. You can blow it up, move it around, twist it, flip the pages, whatever you want to do. But you can also, if you decide you just want a print copy, you can order one online. And we'll ship it out to you.
All right. So, yeah, the baseball preview issue is going to be out on the stands here soon. And is it available for download yet or no?
It's available right now.
Okay.
On the website, TigerRag.com.
Go to TigerRag.com, and you can check out the roster, different player profiles. Is this a critical year for Beth Tarina, or is it just?
Oh yeah.
You think, Andre?
I do. Especially with the talent that she's brought in over the years, it's definitely time this year. She's even gone to the transfer portal this year. She's got the most players she's ever gotten in the transfer portal.
She's moved off of third base. She's just going to be in the dugout, trying to manage things.
Oh,
better.
How about that?
Right. Yeah. She's going to be managing the pitching. More intensely this year. She's she's definitely honed in on a few different things to allow the team to perform better this year. And now that they have Taylor Pleasance as the infield kind of coach, I think that's going to help a bunch too.
So how do you feel, Andre, about the fact that the SEC coaches ranked Tarina's team seventh in the preseason poll?
I wouldn't take it, you know.
That's two spots up from last year.
I mean, to be fair, the SEC is a gauntlet in softball, especially
brutal.
When, you know, last year a team like Ole Miss, who wasn't really supposed to do well, made, you know, Oklahoma City. So it's going to be different this year. I think they're going to have about 9 to 10 teams that could legitimately be ranked throughout the year, sort of like how we see in women's basketball right now. It's just – It's going to be a balanced league outside of Texas and Oklahoma. Those two teams are going to be still the kind of juggernauts that you see every year. But I think LSU has a chance with their schedule this year to really make some noise and kind of put themselves in a better position than in years past to kind of host the Super maybe this year. And that would certainly help them, their path to get to OKC.
So you shifting, go ahead.
You can't lose a Southeastern at home.
You can't, no.
Not end your season.
You can't lose twice as well.
You can't do that.
Yeah, so shifting to baseball. Baseball is number one in USA Today. Came out today.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, defending national champs. And, of course, we have tons of content in the baseball guide about that that's on sale right now and available on the site. But – what's the biggest thing that you think this team is going to need to, both of you, what is Jay Johnson going to need to do to, I mean, you know, Andre was talking about softball SEC. Baseball SEC is just treacherous in terms of competition.
Biggest concern going into the season? Is that the question that you're?
Yeah. What's the biggest concern in your guys' mind for this baseball team? It's ranked number one in the nation right now.
I think that says it all.
There's not
a lot of concern.
I mean, what you like about the team is the depth, right? Because they're here's what you think the starting lineup is, you know, and this is not necessarily the batting order, but Stanfield, Carriel, Jake Brown, Caraway.
That's left, center, and right.
Yeah, Caraway in third. Milam's at short. Second base, I'm going to go Tanner Reeves, Hayden, Simpson, Zach York at first.
Aaron Beattie.
Arabi catcher. If someone falls flat on their face, somebody will. Somebody will get off to an atrocious start, hit, you know, 205 or 208 over the first 3 or 4 weeks. There is somebody to step up and fill that role. You know, you go back to 2024 when Paxton Kling struggled and Thatcher Hurd struggled. there was nobody there to pick those guys up. Like, they never had a center fielder that season. Okay, they never had a leadoff man that year because there was so Paxton Kling was supposed to be the next Dylan Cruz, and he wasn't. And Thatcher Hurd wasn't very good. And then there were other guys that just didn't, and there just wasn't enough depth. What I like about this team is the depth. That to me is the biggest thing about it.
What's your biggest concern?
Well, I think it still will always be pitching. I think what you had out of the two national championship seasons, you had two just bona fide aces. Now, Paul Skeens developed into that really quickly in 2023. Cade Anderson really became that guy by the end of the year. And that just sets the table for everything else. It makes it easier for your number two guy. You're most likely going to win that first game. That way, who's ever starting on the third day, you're either winning the series or you're not trying to salvage one game out of the series, avoid the sweep. I think it just sets it all up. So can Cason Evans or whoever, is it going to be William Schmidt or whoever the guy will be, can they step up and be that Friday night guy? Because to me, it's like the point guard. It's like the quarterback. It sets the tone for everything.
Well, I think what was great about last year's team, because it only hit 103 home runs, was they had the best top two starters in the country, in Cade Anderson and Anthony Ianson.
Yeah.
No two pitchers ranked higher than them anywhere in the country.
Right.
And I think Cason Evans is going to be your ace this year, but the question is who is going to be that number two guy,
yeah.
And is the number two guy going to be as dominant as Ianson was last year? But I think that's not really – I don't have a concern about this team. That's not really a concern as much as it is who's it going to be, because they got plenty of guys who it can be. And then the other thing is, you know, they only hit 103 home runs last year. They hit 146 when they won it all in 23. I think this team's going to hit more home runs. They got some power hitters in the transfer portal, like Zach and Seth Dardar and some other guys.
I just want to clarify your statement. You think they're going to hit more than they hit last year? You're not saying they're going to hit 146.
No. I think they'll be probably in the 120 to 130 range.
Okay. All right, we got to take a break. Matt McMahon will join us when we come back after this break here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. While I'm a fourth-generation rice and soybean grower, you don't have to be a farmer to be a Louisiana Farm Bureau member. Membership has its benefits, from discounts on car seats, hotel rooms, and rental cars, to access to insurance you can count on to be there when you need, plus a whole lot more. We're 145,000 members strong, and we want you to join the Louisiana Farm Bureau family.
Visit lafarmbureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
How you doing? This is Snoop Dogg.
Tiger Rag. Tiger Rag Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, you are tuned in.
Talk LSU sports, interviews, opinions, and your calls around the Tiger Nation.
Baton Rouge was the life for me. Home of the LSU Tigers.
Now more Tiger Rag Radio.
Hey, we love to score and get highlights and championships and play to win.
Tiger Rag Radio.
All right, back here on Tiger Rag Radio. We got about 20 minutes to go in the show. We got two guests to get to. Let's get to our first one, and that is LSU men's basketball coach Matt McMahon. The Tigers taking on the Georgia Bulldogs on Saturday at 5 o'clock. Coach McMahon, thanks a lot for spending some time with us, and you're back from your trip from the North Pole over there in South Carolina. How you doing?
Hey, awesome to be with you. I appreciate you having me on. Watching a little high school hoops here on a Tuesday night, so I've stepped outside, but it's great to be with you. And we are thankful to be back in Baton Rouge after another winter storm this weekend in South Carolina.
Yeah, crazy how the weather has been. This season, unfortunately, a couple of big injuries have hurt this team. Jalen Reed, and now this with DJ Thomas, as you're trying to get him back healthy. Outside of the injuries, is there something with this team that you thought an area of the game that you thought they would be better in than what they've been able to show so far?
I think the injuries certainly present challenges, but, you know, every team deals with that. I think one of the bigger issues with us with DJ's foot injury here is we've really had to change our style of play on the offensive side. So that's been a little bit of a challenge. But when you look at the performance since we played this lineup three games now with Rashad King at the point, Max and Markel on the wings, and then Mike and Pablo in the front court, really with Rob Miller as a sixth man. Now, we've played really well in those three games. And so trying to find some things that will work for us there. But to get to your question, I think the ability to defend the three-point shot has not been where it needs to be. Teams are just shooting too high a percentage there. And we're not a high-volume three-point shooting team. That's not how we were constructed. So it puts us at a disadvantage on some nights where we have not defended the three at the level required for this league.
Coach, Max was not at point guard on Saturday, but he had 8 assists. Could you explain how that – you talked a little bit about that on your show last night, and you had said after the game that you told him, hey, you got to be more of a distributor. But how did that work out so well?
Yeah, great question, Glenn. I think, as you've seen with DJ throughout the season, one of the nation's leaders in assists, really our offensive attack has been a lot of ball screens and dribble handoff type actions. Well, with him not in the fold, we need to incorporate a lot more off-ball screening into our offensive attack. By that, I'm saying Mike and Woko setting pin-down screens for Max, setting cross screens and back screens for our forwards to get into the post. And I thought Max played really well. His movement without the ball, being a high IQ player, really, really good. And what he was doing, he was curling a lot of screens on Saturday, and their five man was helping, and he was able to throw lobs to Mike and Rob Miller and get us some easy baskets there. And the other change, we were able to use Pablo Tamba as a secondary creator for us and decision maker as the passer, and he had 4 assists and 1 turnover. So I thought that combination was really good for us on Saturday.
Coach, when you look at the season, you're at the midway point of the SEC right now, and I know when you drew it up in your mind, you didn't draw it up at 2-7. We've already talked about the injuries and how they've adversely impacted you. But, I look at every single game that you've played. I've looked across the conference. I've seen everybody play. And there's not a team in this conference that you can't beat on any given night. And you've got 9 games left in the conference. Even though you don't know if DJ is going to be back on Saturday or, if he's going to continue to have problems with that foot, it's almost like this team is learning how to play and responding to the challenge and getting better offensively without him. Is that a benefit to this team? And what is your course to get to the playoffs, to the postseason right now?
Yeah, sure, Todd. I think, the execution on Saturday, we scored 31 baskets. 23 of those were assisted on, which is a season high for us. And that's really the pathway forward for us. A lot of ball movement. We were really good in our screening actions and played with great unselfishness. Halfway through, as you mentioned, not where we want to be, but there's a lot of basketball left to be played. We've got a 2-game homestand. Starting on Saturday with Georgia. Hopefully we are able to take advantage of this bye week, not only to get rested, but to get better as a team and kind of adapt to these new lineups that we're playing and be locked in and ready to go on Saturday night. Why you asked, DJ's been, he re-injured his foot the first 2 minutes of the Mississippi State game. And he tried to play through it, just couldn't do it. So he's been off since Wednesday of last week. We held him out, obviously, for Saturday's game and practices. He's out yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Then we'll see where we're at on Thursday and evaluate, what his impact can be moving forward. But I wish I had a more definitive answer for you there, but that's kind of where he's at right now.
But how do you balance that yourself? Because now, when he first got hurt and he missed those first 5 SEC games, that was like a horrible situation for the team because it's almost like the offense couldn't operate without him. But now your offense is clicking and it's operating and it's like you've got a new variable in play. So how do you balance that moving forward if he is available?
Yeah, I think he'll have to be in spots where he plays. I don't think missing as much practice time as he has, you're not going to be able to see him if he is able to get back at 30, 32 minutes a game. So it'll be in lower volume minutes there. But I like the way we're playing. with the ball movement and the screening and the execution there offensively. We do have good size on the floor in that starting lineup now. We're 6'5 at the one and 6'6 at the two, 6'8 at the three. So, it enables us to do a few things differently there. Don't have the same quickness, obviously, but we just got to figure out ways to give ourselves better chances to win in these close games. That was what I was most pleased with on Saturday. Our execution in the overtime period was really top notch on both sides of the ball.
You may not agree with me on this, but I mean, South Carolina had your number in the first half of the first game in Baton Rouge. You had to rally back, beat them by 15 points, if I'm not mistaken, in the second half. This game goes to overtime, but I kind of thought you guys let them back in the game numerous times in the second half, and you could put them away.
Well, I think the biggest issue for us in the first half, Todd, we got off to a great start, came out with great energy. We built a 12-point lead, and then in the final 6 minutes of the first half, number one, we had some foul trouble issues. Number two, we turned the ball over too much. We had 8 turnovers in the first half. And then three, they got some second chance opportunities, and they were able to close the game to 1. In the second half, in the overtime period, 12 assists, only 3 turnovers. Did a much better job there with our ball security. Got a lot of high-quality shots and really executed well there. And then made just enough stops in the overtime period to get out of there with the win. Yeah.
Coach, does part of you wish that you would have had a game on Wednesday after, you know, you played so well on Saturday? You know, you win a game and then you got to take a whole week off, or was it a good thing?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good question, Glenn. I think probably just being at the midway point of SEC, you know, things being so choppy, playing different styles with some of the injury stuff. I think it came at the right time. Gives us a chance to really fine tune some things that you saw on Saturday. Gives us a chance to really reset and recharge going into the home stretch. And, you know, I think our guys have done a really good job this week of finding that right balance of staying in game shape, also recharging and making sure that, you know, we're improving our team. Because, like I said, a lot of basketball left to be played here.
I know you want to see a good first half, because I know that's got to be a head-scratcher to see these rough first halves that you had against State, South Carolina, the Prairie View A&M game. Any reason for those?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's one we certainly have dug into. I think you saw us get off to the poor starts the first week of SEC play, and then, you know, the next 2 weeks we played really well in the first half and not as well in the second, and so – I was obviously disappointed in the performance against Mississippi State. And so, you know, just trying to be more consistent there. I think the common theme to the games you mentioned is what I said in the start of the interview, the ability to defend the three. We played some teams that came out and got off to really hot shooting starts, and it dug us a hole. And, you know, we've got to avoid that. That was, you know, obviously part of the game plan going into Saturday. Elijah Strong, he's been shooting the three at 45%, and we wanted to really make sure we ran him off the three-point line to start the game, and I thought Mike Nwoko, Pablo Tamba did a terrific job there.
Coach, we'll let you go. Thanks a lot, man. We appreciate it. Let's see what we could do in the second half, right?
No doubt about it. Look forward to seeing you at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Thanks so much.
All right, that's LSU men's basketball coach Matt McMahon. Let's take a break. Corey Diaz will talk some Lady Tigers when we come back here on Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Let's go!
Back to Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
We only got about 10 minutes or so left to go here in the show. Still got another break to get into, so let's get right to our next guest. He covers LSU women's basketball for the USA Today Network. Corey Diaz joining us here on Tiger Rag Radio. Corey, how you doing tonight?
Hey, guys. Doing well. How are you all?
Doing well. Let's cut right to the chase. What's the biggest key here for LSU in beating Texas for a second time this season?
Yeah, you know, I actually have a nice little preview story up over at theadvertiser.com ahead of this thing. You know, something that that stuck with me from the last meeting, you know, Vic Schaefer comes in the post game and he really emphasized how disappointed and displeased he was with this team and how little touches that Kyla Oldacre, you know, their 6'6" center, got during the game on the offensive end. So if I know anything about Vic Schaefer, he's going to want the ball inside early and as often as possible. So that means Kate Cavall and Amaya Joyner are going to have really sound, smart defensive performance in this game, because I do think Oldacre, you know, she's probably going to play a lot with her back to the basket with the ball in her hands. And that means, you know, you can't get in foul trouble. You know, you got to keep your feet on the floor. So I think inside defense is going to be a big key in this game for LSU. You know, I think another thing is that, you know, Roy Harmon, you know, Texas's, you know, right, ace point guard, you know, she had probably one of her worst performances in her entire collegiate career, you know, here the other few weeks ago. You can't rely on that. You know, I think, you know, the typical Roy Harmon is going to be what LSU should expect in this game. So, you know, that means if she's forcing, you know, Malaysia or Jada to get the ball out of their hands early in the shot clock, then the other perimeter players, i.e. Michaela Williams, Swajay Johnson, they're going to have to do a really good job of, if they work themselves into open spaces on the floor to take shots, they kind of need to knock those shots down, because Texas is going to, I can tell you right now, from the tip of this game, they are going to full court press, especially coming off the loss to them a few weeks ago. They want that get back. They're going to press LSU the majority of this game. So those are kind of my keys to this game. If LSU is able to sort of, you know, keep Kyla Oldacre at bay inside on the offensive end and take care of the basketball and sort of work themselves into open spaces in the area to get good looks at the basket, they'll be in a good position to win the game Thursday night.
Corey, when LSU and Texas have played over the last 2 years, and I realize LSU certainly had a completely different team than they have this year, but the games have been extremely physical and extremely, you know, boring offensively for the most part relative to the other games. Do you feel like LSU's operating at a different level right now, offensively especially, than they have been going into these games? And is that an advantage for LSU against Texas on the road in a rematch?
Well, Todd, I'll say that I think from a mindset standpoint, going into a game like this, it certainly can do nothing but help, you know, LSU. I just think that, like, you know, I know – you know, I think we all maybe got kind of lost in the numbers a little bit ahead of that Alabama game on Sunday, them having the, you know, the second best defense and, you know, the SEC. But, you know, how many tough opponents has Alabama played up to this point? You know, I'm not sure. You know, like their schedule's kind of been like LSU's in a way. They challenged themselves a little bit non-con, but not to the, you know, level of a Texas. Texas's defense is just at another level. Honestly, Todd, I'm expecting the same sort of, you know, knockdown, drag out, you know, first team to 60, you know, might win this game. You know, if you remember the game that was in Austin, I believe it was last year, it was, you know, LSU struggled to get anything going. They led at halftime and then they came out in the second half. Texas made that adjustment and LSU struggled to get anything going in the second half. And that's why I said, I went back and I watched the Texas-Oklahoma game. Texas is going to – they're going to full-court press LSU from the tip, you know, and that's on – it's on made baskets, it's on missed baskets, it's on after free throws, you know. And if you remember the second half of the game here a couple of weeks ago, that's how Texas late in the game clawed their way back to within 3 points of LSU, was that they started full-court pressing, and LSU had trouble inbounding the ball off of made baskets late in the game. So – I would suspect, obviously, Kim and Bob and the rest of the crew, like they've worked on those situations, but that's going to be a big thing in this game. And I do think, you know, again, I think the first team to score 60, 65 points Thursday night is probably going to win this game.
Corey, let's take a break. And if you don't mind, we'll if you can stay on, we'll have you for a few more minutes to the top of the hour and talk a little bit more about Thursday's game and this team. So
yeah, absolutely. Sounds good.
Hold on. More of Tiger Rag Radio from the Super Chevy Dealer Studio.
Chevy trucks have you covered when the road takes you from smooth sailing to Chevy Colorado will eat up some of the toughest terrains with 5 available drive modes. And Silverado and Silverado HD have the muscle to take you out for some serious with multiple engine options and impressive towing, while Silverado EV is the perfect combo of performance and capability,
nice,
making it a snap to hitch up this electric truck and hit the road. Wherever the road leads, Chevy trucks are right there with you. See your super Chevy dealers today.
I'm Richard Fontenot, president of the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation. My brother and I grow rice, soybeans, and raise crawfish on our farm in Evangeline Parish. For a fourth-generation farmer like myself, Louisiana Farm Bureau is as much a part of my life as checking traps or harvesting rice. Our organization is more than 145,000 members strong, and we've been around for more than 100 years. The Louisiana Farm Bureau spans generations, and we want you to join our family.
Visit LAFarmBureau.org, the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation, the voice of Louisiana agriculture.
And we're back with Tiger Rag Radio, live from Super Chevy Dealers Studio.
All right, only a few more minutes left in the show, and just a few more minutes, obviously, of Corey Diaz, who covers LSU women's basketball for the USA Today Network. Corey, is this team good enough to win the SEC regular season title? They sure look like it, at least right now.
Yeah, you know, I think it's a three-team race. You know, I guess the way it's been since Texas joined the league, right? It's South Carolina, it's Texas, it's LSU. And I think at this point, you know, just with some of the other results we've seen, some of the other conference games over the last couple of weeks, just, you know, I think this year more than we've seen, there's just more parity. So I do think, weirdly enough, like, you know, there was a national championship winning team here 3 years ago, right? But I think this team is better suited and in a better position to possibly win an SEC regular season championship more so than that one, just because obviously that year that South Carolina team was just so dominant. So, but we don't have that. I don't think we have that team in the league this year. I think top to bottom, Texas is probably, you know, when we talk about talent, it's probably the best team in the league, but you know, LSU has proven that they can be beaten. You know, South Carolina has beaten them recently. So, you know, I just hope we don't get in a situation, you know, here in a few weeks where we're having to go to like the sixth tiebreaker to figure out who the one seed in the SEC tournament is going to be. That's just not fun to me.
Well, to that point, Corey, true or false, if LSU does beat Texas on Thursday night, there's no way they lose to South Carolina on February 14th. True or false?
I'll say this. Even if they lose a close game on Thursday night in Austin, come back, I think the energy in the building on Valentine's Day night in the PMAC, it's going to be something like we all witnessed 2 years ago when it was a top 10 matchup on a, you know, Sunday mm-hmm. afternoon between South Carolina, LSU, and the PMAC. I think the atmosphere Saturday night is going to be otherworldly. Mm. So yeah. I will say this. I'm not comfortable saying that LSU will beat South Carolina this year, but what I will say, Todd, is that I think this is the best chance since Kim Mulkey has been at LSU that LSU has to beat South Carolina in the regular season this year.
All right, quick follow-up to that.
You got about 20 seconds.
LSU could be a number one seed.
In the NCAA tournament or the SEC tournament?
NCAA tournament.
Yes, I think if they win either at Texas or against South Carolina – in the regular season, obviously, and they handle their business in the rest of those games. And if they get to the semifinals of the SEC tournament, they're a one seed.
Corey, thanks a lot. That does it for Tiger Rag Radio. For Andre, Glenn, Todd, I'm Jeff Palermo. We'll see you next Tuesday. Thanks a lot.
Tiger Rag is everywhere. Online at TigerRag.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TigerRag Magazine or follow us on Twitter at Tiger_Rag.